Welcome to the Hunting Camp Podcast.
It's like a beast. Oh my god.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast hunt. Holy cow.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Hunting Camp Podcast. In this week's episode, we have our good buddy Andy come on the podcast and discuss pheasant hunt basics, dog training tactics and tips, and a discussion of how his 2022 pheasant hunting season has gone in the state of Wisconsin. Let's get into the episode now.
Sitting here fucking ready to talk.
Yeah, right. Let it ride.
All right, Andy, how has been the year on the public land pheasant ground so far? Pretty decent, pretty good year?
It's been okay. We had, we were out a few times. Opener, we did what? We bagged out opener.
We did.
We bagged out opener.
I had to chase that third bird.
Archer, Bud, and I, yeah.
Chased him down.
He did a good job with that. He did a real good job. I don't know if you heard the story, but we got back to the truck and Bud heard one. And he's like, "Did you hear that?"
He was cackling. He was calling me.
Then he cackled again, and I'm like, "Oh, son of a bitch, there is one cackling over there." It's like we hemmed and hawed about it, and then we left the dog in the truck, and him and I just went out, and we were looking, and we searched all around, and I was way up by the road, and that's when I heard Bud single shot, and I'm like, well, that works. But
I ground dusted him.
Yeah. Which, whatever. I mean.
So this was the opener, right?
Yep.
And you're hunting the eastern side of the state, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to be too specific on the location.
This is also the same parking lot where we pulled in and there was two roosters sitting in the parking lot.
Yeah. It was, we checked a couple different lots first, and then we pulled into that one and seeing the two there, it's like, oh, all right, yeah, that's on.
There were legit two roosters sitting in the parking lot.
So it was like double up there.
It was a tough decision, but, you know. But yeah, it was a good opener. I mean, we cooked out some breakfast, and
yeah.
It was, the field was big enough. Those, I don't know, there was a couple of guys that rolled in after we got there.
Yeah.
There was three guys in that truck that, they didn't have a dog, but you know, it was fine. There was enough field to go around, so we just kind of set up a game plan, and they took one half of the field, mm-hmm. We took the other half and kind of split it out. Unfortunately, I don't think those other guys had any shots on any birds.
Theoretically, we shouldn't even have to chase down the third bird because we did miss one bird.
Oh, you missed one too? So you got the two, then missed one?
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah, whatever.
That's okay. It happens.
It's fine. It's fine.
So,
I like shooting. I just shoot at birds to make them learn, you know.
Yeah, for future hunts.
Yeah, you know.
Trying to avoid the pressure.
Yeah. Let them push off, give them a little education, you know, make a harder hunt next time.
Yeah, it was amusing.
So
it was
fun. The openers are, what, middle of October, somewhere around that time frame, or is it beginning of October? I don't know. I'm the novice of the crew here.
It was middle of October.
I think it was like October 19th or something like that.
So what's a little intel on
October 15th was season opener.
Okay.
Saturday.
And is there a certain time that you're allowed to start hunting? Or
9 a.m. on opening day.
The opening day is 9 a.m.
Yeah.
After that is the same as deer hunting.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, I'm the novice. So why is there a 9 o'clock a.m.?
I have no idea.
Why? Because they stock birds.
Okay. Does that give them time to stock birds in like that morning or no. the night before? Or?
I think it's just so you don't shoot them off the roost.
Yeah.
If I had to take a guess, because yeah, I'm sure even there's probably guys even on private land.
Okay.
You know.
Well, I got some more questions because, like I said, I'm the novice. What does pheasant look like when it's roosting? Because, like, I've turkey hunted, you know, they sit on limbs. Is that the same way?
Yep. They just sit? Yeah, they'll tree.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it more like smaller type stuff, mm-hmm. like shrubby type stuff?
Yeah, your French rose.
Okay. Yeah. I did not know that. I learned something.
They'll do all
the little
kinds of trees.
Little tiny trees on the French rose? No, that's where they are.
No shit.
Yeah, they'll roost some trees. Yeah.
I did not know that. That's pretty freaking cool. That's
a bird,
really.
A bird is a bird, man.
I didn't know that. So, like, most, like, grouse and stuff, they all roost and whatnot?
Yeah, grouse do, too.
Oh, man. I'm looking at all sorts of stuff.
I've shot grouse out of trees.
They'll nest on the ground.
Okay.
Yeah, nesting is a totally the same as a turkey. A hen turkey in the spring has its nest on the ground. And that's the only time where it's really like, I don't want to leave the ground. Okay. But.
So I got more questions for you. I guess if you don't mind, if I back up this conversation, because I'm not familiar with this, I just might want to just talk about some basics here. Mm-hmm. So like you said, they roost and whatnot. Like, I'm just trying to compare it to a turkey. Before they fly up, do they, they cackle? Is that what it's called, or is there?
I
don't think they do it coming out of roost. Not like what, like, you're thinking, like turkey does.
Okay.
Yeah, like the whole like shock gobble and stuff like
okay.
that.
Yeah, they won't.
Okay.
Do that. No. Typically, especially if you get on wild birds, they're skittish. They're super skittish. If they see you, if they hear a car door slam or whatever, they're gonna run. They're gonna fly. They're gonna bolt.
Okay. Wild birds or birds that have some experience with hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, your planted birds, I mean, they're...
Man, I learned
something. They're kind of silly.
That's super cool. Is there any other things that you guys can think of, like, that a novice, like, pheasant hunter, like, just doesn't know that you think they should know, I guess, is a question?
As far as like just going out,
Going out. What are some of the like basics that you guys, that you guys don't even think about now, that like when you first started pheasant hunting, that you guys like utilize or do?
Terrain.
Okay.
Yep. Terrain would be a big one. What they're looking for.
Cover.
Cover. The ditches. I mean, they don't call them ditch chickens for nothing.
Okay.
Any kind of ditches. You know, guys in the south would call them the hollers or the, you know, the
creek
beds and stuff like that. Lowlands, they do like cattails. So DNR, you can check the DNR website for areas that they stock. Also just other areas of, you know, that are popular in the state that naturally reproduce, like kind of down in your area.
Okay.
I think what else? Onyx maps.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a lot of good areas mapped.
They literally have a layer that says pheasant area.
Yeah.
Like as far as like the DNR property, it literally says pheasant area.
Okay.
It's like, well, that's a good area to go check.
Yeah. Especially if, you know, even if you were to generalize as upland bird hunting, there's a lot as far as, you know, your grouse and your woodcock, and even your cover. Going back to the cover, you'll have some old growth forests, you'll have some aspen areas, you'll have some recent burn areas, mm-hmm. clear cut areas. So all these areas that are kind of focal points for upland birds.
Okay. So you guys talked about the cover side of things. How important, I'm just relating it to turkey hunting because turkeys need food, cover, water, that sort of thing. How important is water, and how important is it finding food sources near the cover that they're utilizing?
Personally, I would put food source. So if you're gonna categorize, and you got say the, mm-hmm. the your top three, your cover, I would say, and this is just my opinion, cover would be number one.
Okay.
Water would be number two, food would be last. Pheasants don't have a problem flying. Like, you know, turkeys, okay. turkeys run and walk everywhere,
yeah,
for the most part. Pheasants have no problem flying. We've seen pheasants fly.
Yeah, I believe that.
Especially after you launch three shells at them.
Yeah.
They'll fly a long way.
Yeah, they will.
No, I bet. No, that's just cool because, like, I have no insight on this stuff besides, you know, my experience with turkey hunt or with pheasant hunting is seeing them from the tree stand and hopefully launching an arrow at them. That's my experience. Or I'm scouting and
most likely
I bump them.
Because you're hunting the cover stars.
Yeah. So that's super cool. So we talked about cover, water source. Do they need, like, water as bad as, like, turkeys? Or they can take a drink here or there and they're good to go? Or do they get most of their moisture from just, like, what they're eating? Like,
yeah. Yes and no. I mean, it depends on where you're at and where you're hunting. Because, like I said, they do have a fondness for cattails. They like the cattails. Yeah. And if you're finding cattails, you're finding water. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
What is it? Is it the cattails? Is the cattails the cover, or is the cattails the water?
Both. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know.
In these cattails, I'm not sure what they eat. If they eat bugs, plants, or like, do they have any food sources like within the cattails? Are they? I don't know what they eat. What do pheasants eat?
Andy would be better at this. He's done a lot more research on pheasants. I like
is it shoot. Bugs,
most, eggs? I mean, they'll eat bugs. They'll eat, you know, any kind of insects and stuff like that they can. But they also feed on a lot of grains,
okay.
Corn, seeds. I essentially think like a grouse.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Kind of the same food sources.
Acorns? At all or
no
acorns? Okay.
But I mean, maybe, but not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Is that just probably a little bit too big for them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly seeds and insects, grains.
Oh, that's
corn,
super cool. That's super
corn,
cool.
Stuff like that.
All right, so we got kind of the basic cover, water, food source, that type of thing. All right, so your gear. Let's just go through like a typical day pheasant hunt, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So, the night before, I guess you'd start with the night before. Like,
Andy's got a lot more preparation than I do.
Yeah, because he has the dog, obviously.
Yep.
But what are you doing the night before to prepare for a hunt the next day?
So, my night before is actually pretty lazy.
Okay.
I really don't do, but.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let her fucking ride, dude.
I really don't. I really
put it,
don't do
put
that
in perspective.
Shit.
Andy is a very prepared man. So now, if you were like a lazy hunter, and you had to get all your stuff around,
well, sure, you'd have to get ready. But for me,
your stuff already laid out.
I prep and I have multiples.
Okay.
I have multiples of everything. When you're, you know, obviously when you're doing, say deer hunting, you got your blaze horn.
Yep.
You got to have some blaze when you're pheasant hunting too.
Okay.
My knit hat that I wear for deer season stays in my deer season tote. I have a separate knit hat for my hunt, my pheasant tote.
Yep.
So for me, I find that to be super efficient, super effective.
Yeah.
Because the night before, you could call me up at 10 o'clock tonight and say, hey, let's go hunting tomorrow morning.
And you're ready to rock.
Sure, let's do it.
Got all your ammunition.
Everything.
Yep.
But
everything's ready to go. I can pull a tote, pull a gun case, pull my gun out of the safe. I'm ready to rock and roll.
But what's in your tote?
So in my tote, an archer's tote. Archer, he's my son. He hunts with me all the time. So I have his gear in there too. So in the tote, we have hunting vests, hats, gloves, chaps. Chaps are chaps are fantastic for upland and pheasant hunting. Keeps you out of the burrs. Mine are waterproof as well, so those early morning dews and frosts and stuff like that, it keeps you nice and dry.
Oh, I know that. That's like... That's
waterproof boots. And then I have a separate bag for ammunition.
What are your backup type bag for any backup stuff that you need?
No, that's all kind of in the tote.
Just everything's right there.
Yeah,
right.
Everything's in the tote. I have enough for, say, if there's two, maybe even, mostly two, because usually Archer's with me. So if Archer's not with me, I got enough for three guys.
Gotcha.
Between hats, gloves.
That's smart.
Ball caps, knit hats.
Yeah.
Vests. Chaps, I don't. Chaps, you're on your own. If you didn't bring your chaps, you're on your own. You're getting wet. Sorry, suck it up, Sally.
Yeah.
But yeah, ammunition. I think what else is in there?
Anything you
toiletries,
bring?
Toiletries, because you never know.
Toiletries, you never know. That's probably my most important thing that I always bring.
You never know when nature calls, and I tell you what, baby wipes are a godsend.
Yeah, Andy's talked to me plenty about baby wipes. He loves baby wipes.
Nobody likes a dirty butthole when you're out there.
No, heck, it's...
Because you never know when it happens.
I've been in way too many dams where I'm relying upon leaves. Some days I'm just running out without a wipe.
If you're in a pheasant field, you don't have oak leaves. You're in a pheasant field. You have CRP.
Yeah, that's a rough situation.
So to put it in perspective, you're looking at sorghum, corn, cattails.
Okay.
All of which are, and if you're not
good wipe,
if you're not into it and you don't have a dog and you're not hunting them, you don't realize. But all of that stuff is extremely abrasive.
Yeah.
It was an opening morning, but it was a couple of weekends after when you and I and Archer were out. Gunnar was hunting hard. We didn't put up any birds that day, unfortunately. And that was kind of our turning point. Because we usually try to hunt public as much as we can until it kind of wears out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Wears out, gets over-hunted. A lot of guys have been out, a lot less birds, and your bang for your buck just isn't there anymore. And that's usually when I make the switch to hunt.
Farms.
And just to keep Gunner in the game.
Just keep him moving.
Yeah, I was going to back up a little bit, if you don't mind. So, we talked about your prep and everything you do. What do you do to get Gunner prep for the next day? Do you have him drink more water than typical? What's going on there?
So, I do give him...
food?
I give him some treats that are a little more high in fat the night before. Because he's... So, for anybody that doesn't know who Gunner is, he is a yellow lab. He's tall. He's a big dog. He runs about 90 pounds, but he's very tall. But he's also very lean. He's very lean to the point where,
to me, he looks like an athlete. He looks like an athlete.
He really does.
He's very
lean. He's streamlined.
Yeah.
But he's 90 pounds.
Who's that? The Bolt guy from the Olympics, 12 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's an athlete. He's like Giannis from the Bucks or something.
He's very lean to the point where, he's still at a healthy weight. The vet says he's at a good healthy weight, but they don't want to see him get any thinner.
Yeah. He's like the wide receiver of the NFL. It's like,
He's Christian Watson.
He's 2% body fat.
he's tall and lean.
Yeah, no, he's a good looking dog for sure.
So
treats.
I'll give him some high fat treats the night before.
Okay.
Bump the calories.
Yeah.
I'll usually feed him early in the morning.
Okay.
because he is a big dog, he's deep chested, so you worry about, as a dog person, because if the dog does too much activity after eating, what happens is that their stomach can flip.
Okay.
And that's catastrophic. Like,
yeah, yeah, that ain't good.
No, there's a lot of dogs that unfortunately pass from stuff like that. So I'll feed them early in the morning, like really early.
Yeah.
Hours and hours and hours before we get to a pheasant field.
Right.
And then once we get to the field, he does get treats in the field, but when he's hunting, he's on the job. He's not like a typical lab. He's not very food motivated in the field.
Yeah.
In the field, he wants to hunt. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want to take the time to take water breaks and take treats and take food and stuff like that. He wants to keep going. Cool. So you kind of have to force it.
That's why it's so important
to give him the calories.
And that's why it's so important to feed him the night before. That way he's...
Yeah, and then what I'll usually do is... because usually a hunt is about a half day. And then I'll feed him once we get home. I'll feed him a little bit, like half a serving. And then I'll feed him his normal supper in the evening, too. But other than that, he gets...
So get
the water prep.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but you get water bottles ready at night, that sort of thing, like.
Yeah, we do. Usually for a half day hunt, he's got 3 32-ounce bottles of water. So what's that, 96?
Yeah.
Call it 96 ounces of water. That's what we bring out into the field with us.
So you just use a Nalgene bottle, Gatorade bottles?
Okay. I use Nalgene bottles to haul the water, and then I put Nalgene, or the Gatorade bottles, the squirt bottles, I'll put those in my vest.
Okay.
Cool. And then for him, because he is a big dog, because he's heavy and he's athletic, he puts on a lot of miles while he's out there. He's hard on his paws.
Yeah.
So usually the night before, I'll lube him up with...
Perfect. You're answering my question.
I'll lube him up with... I use Musher's Secret, which is what they use for huskies, for sled dogs.
Okay. So everybody listening, Musher's Secret.
Yep.
Is that... Okay.
That's our recommendation.
That's what I use for him.
Can you find this at Amazon? Where?
You can find it all
Amazon.
Over. A lot of pet food stores. We get it here locally, right in town. Musher's Secret, it works wonders. And even though we try to keep his paws in shape and in condition, he does get cuts. And unfortunately, he's one of those dogs that if he does get a cut or an abrasion on him, he licks the snot out of it.
Yeah.
So
just be honest, Andy.
He's an asshole when it comes to that.
So
a couple weekends ago, we had a hunt. We had a great hunt. We had a new young hunter out with us. A good friend of mine, his son Mason, was out with us. We had a great time. We put out 4 birds. We got 3. We had one that never flushed. It was a runner. It was one of the first birds. With having a young hunter out there, we marked the first 2 birds. Just to get him used to, hey, this is what the dog looks like. This is what happens when he gets birdie. This is how this whole sequence happens. Just to kind of teach him how to do it. And what goes on. And dog got real birdie on one of the marks. It was the second mark. Got super birdie. Searched that area. Couldn't find nothing. Mm-hmm. Searched that area again. Couldn't find nothing again. We even came back to it at the end of the day. And he just never got it. Never. So, I mean, and that happens, right?
Yeah.
I mean, birds, if they get an opportunity to run and they're runners, they're going to run.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, on that hunt, he hunted real hard on that field, and he had, I call them blowouts, he had 2 blowouts, one of the front paws, one of the back paws.
Ooh.
He had a couple of cuts on him, and the one on his back paw, he
tore it out pretty good.
Well, again, it wasn't that bad of a cut that I was too worried about it, but that next morning, I mean, I gotta work, you know? So that next morning we went to work, and by the time we got home that evening, he had that paw just tore raw from licking and chewing on it and whatnot, just because of the irritation.
Yeah, so, I just couldn't leave it alone.
So here's
which you gotta learn with the dog.
Yeah, he's been on IR for the last week or so. We had a planned hunt this weekend. I was gonna guide for a friend of ours, but unfortunately, with his paw in that condition, we pulled the pin on it. We
gotcha.
Unfortunately, so.
That sounds awesome. And you said you had a new hunter. Are there any any gear that you have Gunner wearing to make sure that the dog's safe? Does he wear a belt? Blaze orange?
So to answer your question, yes, I do have all that gear.
Okay.
Most of the time he does not wear it.
Okay.
Late in the season, later in the season, he'll wear a vest. He'll wear a vest. Because he runs so hard and because he hunts hard, he tends to tear up his undercarriage. And with tearing up the undercarriage, that's when I put the vest on.
Yeah.
When it starts getting bad. Usually by the end of the season, he has a bald spot where it wore down on his chest from just running through shit.
Busting brush.
Yeah.
He does have boots. The boots, and he doesn't mind the boots. He's accustomed to them, so he will run boots when it's super, super cold out.
Okay.
And it helps protect him against the ice and the hard snow and hard pack stuff. But one of the issues that we had with the boots last year, there's not a lot of traction with them, so when he gets into deep snow and he kicks her in the four-wheel drive, he still doesn't have the traction. And he ends up exerting so much energy through that deep snow with the boots on that it doesn't pay. And it's better to take the boots off, let those paws spread apart, and let that webbing do what it's supposed to do between his toes.
Very cool. Very cool.
Otherwise, I used to hunt with a bell on him, just because hunting a lot of the tan and brown grasses and being a yellow lab, he blends in and you don't see him.
Yeah, I noticed one time I went out with you guys,
But since then, I did invest in an electronic collar, which helps a lot. It's got a page function on it, so I can run silent, and if I don't know where he is, I can hit the page function and it'll just beep.
Oh, that's super cool.
It lets me know where he's at, so I can understand if he's where he's gonna flush a bird. But it also has the vibrate, nick, and constant stimulation, so in case he does get a little unruly, because I did have an issue with that. He's a relatively young dog. He's only 3. So he's pretty young yet in my book.
But he's heading towards that, right? Yeah.
And the issue that we've been having, which talking to some other guys at the gun clubs and online, it sounds like there has been other people that have issues with, the dog just builds up that confidence, and the dog understands what he's doing out there. So he's doing what he's doing, and if he doesn't sense a bird in that area, he's moving on to the next, and it's your job to keep up. Where he needs to understand that as much as he is a family pet and a loved one and a friend, he's working for me.
Yeah.
So he needs to understand, no, I'm still in control. I don't keep up with you. You hold up to me.
Gotcha.
And he was showing a little bit of that, where he was ranging a little too far and he wasn't listening. So I opted to get I didn't fight the e-collars. I don't have a problem with e-collars, so I want to make sure that that's clear. I have zero issues with the e-collars, but until Gunner gave me a reason to use an e-collar, I wasn't going to use one. Because up until that point, all last season, I had zero issues. All last season. No issues whatsoever. Now this season, he started getting a little bold, and he started getting out a little too far, and he wasn't, you know, and that's the last thing you want to see, is you want to see your dog flush a bird at 60, 70, 80 yards.
Yeah, that makes
that's pointless.
Tough,
It's at that point, why have them? So, I opted for the e-collar, and that has made light years difference. My advice on that is just make sure you take it slow, train them on it, make them sure, condition them to it so they understand what's going on.
Not pound them right away.
And, you know, I do know people personally that, you know, they, you know, they use the term, light them up, light them up. It's like, not
you don't feel too good about it, I bet.
That's not something that, I mean, I don't...
You should.
I don't strive for.
Yeah.
It's not to light them up. It's not a tool of punishment as more as, for me, a tool of...
Keep them focused.
Redirection or just to get his attention. You know,
getting him back on track. Just a reset. What do you call it, a reset?
Yeah, like, it's amazing at what his... you know, and I do a lot of hand signs with him. So if I can get his attention and I can get him to see me, like, so if he's not in brush and cover and he sees me, his recall is if I put my hand down like this.
Yeah.
If I put my hand down like that, he knows.
And he said
like,
just his hand was down to his right hip.
Yeah. So if I put my hand down, like I'm giving somebody a low five, then... Gunner knows, like, okay, that's when I need to come.
Okay.
And he will come all the way back to me. He will loop his nose on my hand, and he'll know, like, okay, now I can reset. I can keep going.
Okay, I got you. Dude, that's awesome.
And
that's,
again,
that's a lot of stuff going on at one time.
There is. And that's where it's like, I'll be honest with you, like, handling a dog, for me, because I am a dog person, and I do love my dog, that... Running my dog is just as rewarding as it is hunting.
Yeah.
Well, I believe
so,
that.
Like, if I take people out hunting and I'm just running my dog, I have no problem not shooting a bird.
You can literally go out there with no shotgun, whatever, but if your dog flushes up every freaking bird, everybody shoots those birds.
It's a win.
Got it. Nailed it.
No, and like I've just talked to so many people, like guys that use their dogs out west for mountain lions, guys that use dogs for bears, guys that use their dogs for waterfowls and whatnot. And you know, it's not about the kill for them; it's about seeing their dog work. And I mean, it's just really cool to see that. And like, I've never got to experience that personally because I'm not a dog owner or anything like that. Even coon hunters. One of my buddies, he raised coonhounds for years and years and years, and it was just amazing seeing, you know, that family work with their dogs to make them the best coon hunting dogs that they can be.
It's very rewarding.
Yeah.
It's super cool to see it all happen, and you know, even the simple things, you know, just seeing your dog do what he needs to do. You know, force fetch. Force fetch is huge. I'm a huge fan of that. Not necessarily, there are some guys that do the force fetch and they do the old school pinch the ear to make the force fetch or whatever. I didn't do that. I worked with them the other way around. I did positive reinforcement versus the negative. But, dude, like, the force pet, it's so easy. There is not an object in this room that I could not hold in front of Gunner and tell him to take, and he wouldn't hold it in his mouth, and he would not release it until I told him,
thank you.
Thank you is my release. I figured, you know, why not, right?
Yeah, that's...
You don't need to be rude and be yelling at him to drop or release or whatever, why not say thank you? Be polite about it. Say thank you. So same with the birds. When he brings me a bird, I say thank you, and he drops it in my hand.
Like, I know it's totally different things, but, like, I think that way about, like, the gear that I use bull hunting. Like, it's a completely different realm, but, like, when I'm setting up a tree stand and it's something I can rely upon, like, a lot of people don't think about thinking their material thing, right. But, like, I'm like, man, this stand is holding my ass up. Like, if this doesn't hold up, I'm fucking dying there. You know what I'm saying?
It's gonna, not going to feel good.
Like, you got to be partners with your dogs. You got to be partners with your equipment. It's...
Yeah.
But no, that's super cool.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Hunting Camp Podcast. It was a fun podcast to record with Bud and Andy about pheasant hunt basics and all that good stuff. In next week's episode, we have Andy on once again, and we discussed public land pheasant hunting tactics, and that was a really good podcast too. So we'll see you guys next week.